This is your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane and famous Exxon gasolines. The wake-up call is also brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday. Now your host, Rick Moore.
Oh, and that's me. Thank you, everybody. Thank you for letting me be back here today. Oh, and don't we all love the the comfort that comes from not having to fundraise on a Sunday. And we can thank Blue Ridge Graphics for helping us be here without having to do any fundraising today. You can find them at Meade Avenue and East High Street, serving Charlottesville with custom t-shirts, sportswear, and professional graphic design since 1979. That's Blue Ridge Graphics, 296-9746, and online, brgtshirts.com. All right, boys and girls, sit down, get comfortable. Lots of learning going on today. And I announced already to my guests that I will probably misspeak multiple times about this topic because I know fairly little about this topic. We're going to talk about mental health. We're going to talk about an organization called Vocal, and we're going to talk about a project that they have ongoing, a book that's upcoming, called The Firewalkers Project. Is that the proper name of the book, by the way? Because I kept finding different words, Firewalkers, Firewalkers Project, The Firewalker Book. And so I never really settled down because the book has not been published yet. So, Brian?
Sure. Thanks, Rick. The name of the book is Firewalkers, Madness, Beauty, and Mystery. And then it has a subtitle, Radically Rethinking Mental Health.
All right, I got to write that down. Firewalkers, Madness, Beauty,
and Mystery.
And Mystery. And it's a book upcoming about...
Really, this book, I think, aims to rethink the way that we think about what our culture calls mental illness and basically recast it as, the way I think of it personally, is recasting it as a sacred journey, as a hero's journey. I've always been personally interested in mythology and the writings of Joseph Campbell. And I think it's basically, you know, when folks have a mental health crisis, it is this journey. And it takes a pattern of going through a crisis. You leave the normal life behind. You have an encounter with strange and unknown things, and ideally at the end of it, you become stronger and have that wisdom that you've experienced, and you return with community to your community with these gifts. And so I think we're trying to recast folks going through a mental health crisis not as just a breakdown or a sickness, but as a powerful sacred journey.
Well, today's going to be interesting, not just for the topic, but also for the calamity that I'm sure to cause during the hour. We are going to talk about mental health. We're going to talk about an organization called Vocal, and we're going to talk about the Firewalkers book upcoming to be printed in October, I believe. And we have five people in here. We have five people. We have three microphones. We have two sets of headphones. That in itself may cause me to have some sort of mental issues before the hour is up. We have Brian, who's the executive director of the organization Vocal. We have Deborah and Joni, ladies who are two folks who are two of the seven stories in the book. What's the best way to put that? Are you...
You can call us Firewalkers.
You can call you Firewalkers. But to the folks who want to have the... want to put the... X equals Y at the start of the hour. You are two of the seven people who are written about. Did you do your own writing about your experiences through mental issues?
We did do some of our own writing, and we also responded to interviewing. But it was what we spoke of that got printed as our pieces.
We also have... Ken, and we have Cassandra. Ken from the editorial board, and Cassandra, with my weak Southern style speaking anymore. It's long gone from moving from a little further south into Charlottesville, who's the editor of the Firewalkers, Madness, Beauty, and Mystery. Let's start, because the book comes through and from the organization Vocal. And I want to know what is Vocal and the purpose of putting this book together.
Well, I think Vocal, we are a what's called a peer-run. We're a community-based, we're grassroots, we're a statewide organization, and our goal is to basically connect folks all throughout Virginia who have been through a mental health crisis or are going through a mental health crisis, to let those folks know that this is something that's normal, that happens over and over again throughout the state of Virginia and throughout the world. 26.2% of adults in the U.S. every year experience mental health symptoms, or as we think of it as a mental health crisis, that are diagnosable in the mainstream as being a mental illness. And that's what we're about, is sort of letting those people know that that's not the end of the story, that you have come down with a sickness and that's just going to be your life from then on. It's like we want to recast that as a journey that can be traveled through, and with support and guidance, you can come out on the other end and come into a new life.
Let me follow up on that. Brian is here from Vocal, Executive Director of Vocal, as we talk about mental issues and the upcoming publication or the upcoming book. 26.2%, for many people, that's a huge number, because I think the expectation or the stigma is that mental health, once it happens, it's forever. It's much like being diagnosed with cancer. I mean, you have it, you do what you can to work on it and recover from it and live with it, but even if you recover from cancer, or you are a cancer survivor, it's still there.
And I think in that example, there are many folks who go through the experience of having cancer, and through different modalities, they might go through, chemo or radiation, or they might use natural means to go through that experience. A lot of folks go into complete remission after that. And I think I'm not an expert on cancer, so I'm just going with that analogy. And I think part of what, I like that medical analogy, because I think one of the things in my heart with this project is that one of the sort of leading inspirations for going with this Firewalkers project was just the experience that I had working with other folks, with peers, as we call ourselves, or persons in recovery, that I ran into people, and myself included, that if we can get to a place beyond the dark, walk through the valley of the shadow of fear related to mental health crisis, that we can come out on the other side stronger and different than when we entered into it, to the point where I ran into folks who'd been through the experience and would not go back to how they were before, similar to stories that I've heard for folks that, say, have had a sudden heart attack, and maybe they were in a life track where they were working very hard and not spending time with their friends and loved ones, and they change as a result of that. And after that heart attack, if you talk to them, they'll say, I will not go back to before that, even though I'm limited in some ways from that physical experience. I have to eat different, I have to exercise different, but they have a new life now. Maybe they're closer to their friends and family, they're following their dreams, and I think there's an analogy for that for folks going through mental health crisis.
But when you have a mental health crisis, I mean, again, you're talking about a quarter of the population. It's not, for the way I originally heard you describe that was that it can be one crisis within the year, and then gone. Is that correct? Because I think for many people, a mental health crisis is, you suffer from mental illness. I'm not sure exactly how to act around you or be worried about working next to you or anything else. And you made it sound like, you have a bad year. And 2010 will be all cool again for many of that quarter of the population.
I think it varies quite a bit. And folks, that figure that I quoted, I think, was a figure that was put together by Mental Health America, the national organization, formerly the Mental Health Association. And that figure, 26.2%, is in any given year, 26.2% of adults in the U.S. are experiencing a mental health crisis that could be diagnosable according to, you know, current protocols for the, you know, the DSM. It's the diagnostic, the statistical manual. I can't remember which one is current. But I think, as one of our core values, is that it is possible to move through these things. So, for example, someone might have a diagnosis of post-traumatic stress disorder. Say they, you know, they maybe had a very difficult childhood. Maybe they were abused. Maybe it's somebody coming back from Iraq or Afghanistan. What used to be called shell shock, I think that's post-traumatic stress disorder these days. I think a lot of these folks, with some care, with some guidance, with support, can get back to having a very fulfilling, self-directed, empowered life. And it doesn't mean necessarily that that person is going to be symptom-free. They might still have nightmares. They, you know, they might have times where they just have to curl into a ball. I think, as with all of us, I think on it, to a certain extent, it's a time where something happens where a straw breaks the camel's back. There could be a steady, you know, there's going through life, there's excitement and stress. And I think there are times in our lives where, for example, I forget who put it together, there's a chart that talks about the different stresses and how many points you get. You know, if you have a death of a spouse or a parent or a loss of a job or change of a home, you know, from one to another, a different office. I think in any given year, most of us, if we're subjected to too much stress, I think it can get to a point where it's intolerable, or it's just too much. It instigates, I think, a crisis. And I guess the question there is, maybe, you know, a person is an equation. They're like, they're themselves, their personality, in their environment. And I think you always have a choice of, you know, you can, if the situation is causing you stress, you can change the situation. You can change your reaction to the situation, or you can remove yourself from it. So we have a lot of power when someone experiences a mental health crisis, or, you know, mental illness as the mainstream culture refers to it. I think it's important to take a holistic view of the situation and see, you know, is it that this person is having a problem, or is it the society that they're in having a problem? You know, working 60 hours a week, 80 hours a week, you know, eating fried foods, you know, all those things I think can contribute to a condition. And to think of just our mind separate from our body, I think we're all whole. And if our body is unwell and we're not getting enough sleep, we're not getting enough love, that can contribute to a crisis.
11:13 here on the Wake Up Call as we talk about Vocal, the organization Vocal, and the upcoming book, Firewalkers, Madness, Beauty, and Mystery. We have Brian, who's the executive director of Vocal, Ken from the editorial board, Cassandra. Did I pronounce that right, or did I mess it up again? Cassandra, who's the editor of the book, and we have Deborah and Joni here, who are each one of the featured folks in the book. I want to talk about the book for a minute as we get away from the organization and, I guess, and the illness itself, but talk about the book. And Deborah and Joni, each of you featured in the book. Whoever wants to start, we'll talk about how you felt, sort of, for another lack of a better application, coming out of the closet in an even greater extent than friends and family. Because, you know, your last names are out there, right? I haven't shouted them out here today because I'm afraid of mispronouncing stuff even more so. Deborah, let's start with you. I want to talk about how you were approached to be a participant in the book and the thought process that you went through to say, sure, yes.
Well, I am fortunate to also be a member of the editorial team for the book. So I've been with the project since near the beginning. And I'm just really passionate about recovery from mental health issues. And the selection process was through interviews and writing and stuff. So I applied to be in the book as one of the people who was willing to come out and talk about my experiences.
But why? I mean, what do you garner personally from standing out this way?
Well, my desire is to instill hope in people. I'm a as a result of my experiences, I've gotten into working in the mental health field as well, and I'm just really passionate about helping people to have hope that recovery is possible, that you can live a life different than maybe what you thought, but maybe even better than what you thought. And I think in sharing my story, that will hopefully help people to be able to relate to being in the hard times and realize that it's not a mental illness is not a death sentence, that things can come from it that you would never expect.
Joni, let me sort of carry this over to you. Is one of the things that I found most interesting about the sort of lead up material that I was provided for the program was that mental illness can be a profound spiritual calling. I'd like you to tell me whether that applied to you, and if so, to talk about it a little bit.
That is really the totality of my journey. When I realized that I had a problem, I was about 21, and you know, you deal with all the medical stuff and all the information, but from that point on, I had to go within, and I had to have this make sense to me. And over the years, my evolution, my personal evolution, has been my journey. I do not put myself in a mentally ill box. I don't even use those terms ever, because it's not what empowers me.
What term? Am I using the wrong
term?
You're
fine. No, I...
What term do you use?
I have a chemical imbalance.
Okay.
I lived in post-traumatic stress for a very long time. I have a diagnosis. I am not those things, but I do have to live a life of balance in order to stabilize my imbalance. As Brian was saying, I meditate, I exercise, I have to eat right. I have to be so connected to who I am and where I am in any given moment that my choices reflect what I need for maintaining balance.
11:18 on the Wake Up Call, as we talk about mental health with the organization Vocal and their upcoming book, Firewalkers, Madness, Beauty, and Mystery. Feel free to dial us up and ask a question. I'm going to ask Sean to take your question and pass it through that way, since we don't have headphones and microphones for everyone. 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. Or I can read your question if you send us an instant message at WNRN Studio. 11:19. Let me take care of this business. This is Markets of Tiger Fuel forecast for Central Virginia and the Shenandoah Valley. Mostly sunny today, highs in the upper 60s, in the upper 70s in Richmond. Cloudy tonight, lows 50 to 55, even colder over in the valley. Sunny tomorrow, highs 70 to 75. Right now, it's a very nice day outside. 64 in the valley, 63 in Lynchburg. 72 in Richmond, 65 in Charlottesville.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call, brought to you by The Hook and by the Markets of Tiger Fuel, a refreshing pause on your journey to anywhere with locations all over town. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
And we always want to thank the folks who support us, such as Duo, a new and gently used contemporary clothing store here in Charlottesville. Duo's fall shipments are arriving daily. You can also sell your gently used clothes. Duo is open Monday through Friday, 10 to 6, and Saturday, 11 to 5. That's Duo, 101 Elliewood Avenue in Charlottesville, or shop online at shopduo.com. All right, back in action here with Brian and Deborah and Joni and Ken and Cassandra. Ladies, Joni and Deborah, as two of the folks, two of the seven stories highlighted in the book, there's a lot of talk about special talents being discovered I guess, after your journey, after your fire walk, if that's the proper way to put it for our hour. Joni, you were just talking about, you know, your personal walk. What special talent have you discovered, and what talents did you lose?
Well, that's an interesting way to look at it. What I have discovered about myself is that I am an incredibly perceptive person, and mostly I'm focusing right now on the internal quote-unquote talents, my abilities as a human being to be really connected to my environment, to those around me, and to the energy that I'm experiencing, and so that I can stay balanced. Really, it's about that for me.
And that's your special talent, is recognizing the perceptivity? I butchered that. The perceptiveness, the ability that you have with perception, is recognizing that it was there all the time and it was sort of being drowned out, or that the crisis made it more possible and sort of highlighted it?
In crisis, the ability to be connected was not there before I understood this whole thing. So I'm a very perceptive person, and that carries me. It enables me to be clear about what I'm doing and what I'm thinking and who I'm being with and what I have to offer people, because I know how much I can give or share or guide from what I've learned. Does that make any sense?
Yes, it does. Deborah, I'm curious about yours as well, because does this apply to you as well, someone who found a special talent through your walk?
Well, I don't know whether I refer to it as a special talent, but definitely I've been, you know, I've had multiple crises since quite young, and it may seem a little backwards, but I've lost a lot of the things that seemed to make me special when I was younger, the ability to be like the smartest and the most together seeming person, but I've found this depth in myself that I didn't have before, and this ability to really relate to people at a level that I think is meaningful to most of us. I think a lot of times I just had a lot of superficial interactions before this, and through my times in the mental health in the hospital and through groups that I've been in, I've just found that I can that I don't have much patience for small talk, but I can really relate to people at a heart level and can give them more compassion than I would have had if I had gone through this journey. So I'm a very different person than I was when I started my journey, and I think a much richer and more diverse person.
We are talking about mental health issues, especially an upcoming book, Firewalkers, Madness, Beauty, and Mystery. Did I get that right? Yes, I got a thumbs up from Brian. We have five people here from the organization Vocal, which is a peer group with mental issues. Cassandra's here, Ken, Joni, Deborah, and Brian. Feel free to call up and ask your question or make your comment, 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. Online, WNRN Studio at AOL. Before we go any further, a big question. I even put this in like multi-size font on my side. When is this book going to be released? Because it's not published yet, correct?
Currently, the book is at the printer, and I think our first sort of kickoff release is actually going to be here in Charlottesville on Thursday, October 22nd. At City Space, which is on the downtown walking mall over the post office, and that's going to be from 6 to 8 p.m. at that location. So we're going to be having folks from the Firewalkers book there, as well as editors of the book. I'll be there. And so we'll have, you know, sort of presentations about the book and be selling the book there. So that's really our first kickoff. We're also going to be having a featured event during the Virginia Festival of the Book on March 20th.
And online, you can go online now and do a little pre-publish looking, correct?
Absolutely, Rick. On we have a website specifically for the book, and that's at thefirebook.org.
We had a call here from Lisa from Rutgersville. I'm not sure who wants to take this. How to deal with depression without antidepressant medication? Deborah or Joni, either of you, can either of you speak about this personally?
Yes, I've done a myriad of things, and I've done a lot of herbal things before, and I found that in and of itself, it wasn't enough for me. It wasn't consistent as a mood stabilizer. I am on some a prescription med, but I also, and I'm on the most minimal that I can take, and everything else I do by environment and meditation.
What do you mean by environment?
Where I put myself.
I mean, do you avoid like large groups, or
do you avoid?
Yeah.
If I'm in,
you didn't go to the U2 concert.
No.
Not to make fun, but
no.
But I mean, you don't go to.
I might choose to do that sometimes, but I have to know that I feel okay doing that. Big crowds don't work well for me. And I exercise every day. I meditate every day. I eat well. So if you can harness in your environments and your states of mind, you can manage and maintain your balance. Sometimes meds are necessary, and they're good.
And I would think that for others, and Deborah, I don't know that this is you, who would almost need the opposite, who wouldn't want to be alone, correct? Wouldn't it change from person to person?
That's definitely very individualized. For me, it's not a safe thing for me to be isolated when I'm not doing well. I need to be connecting with people. Sometimes I can only do it via email, but I just need that connection with other people. When I'm by myself, I tend to get self-harmful and to have thoughts that just go down avenues that I don't want to be going down. So, yeah, I don't want to be in big crowds like the U2 concert, but I want to have people around me.
Brian, or maybe Cassandra or Ken, does somebody want to, because it seems like this question is specifically related to medication and whether or not there are other ways to, that's what it says, how to deal with depression without the medication.
This is Cassandra. I had something I wanted to say. I think it's very perceptive to say that it really is different for every person. And one of the things that we look at in our organization is helping people find a way to create a plan to figure out what's right for you. There's nothing that I can say from my journey that's necessarily going to be the thing that's right for another person. So we have a program that's called Wellness Recovery Action Plan in our organization, and we are leading groups around the state around that. And it's really a place where people can go get together with their peers. It's all led by peers, just like AA would be. The person who's standing up leading the group is somebody who's also been through mental illness. And you go through the 6-week program, and it's figuring out what works for me for medication, for depression. And for some person, they're going to figure out it's medication, and some person's going to figure out it's not medication. And starting to create a plan that you can have for yourself of what's going to work and what's going to work for me when I'm in a crisis and what's going to work for me when I'm approaching a crisis. And then once you've created your plan, a lot of people choose to share that plan with their providers or psychiatrists or friends or family members or whoever they decide are the right people. So we don't really have a specific answer. It's really, we want to encourage you to find your own answer. That's what's worked for us. So, if you do go to our website, if you do want to find out more about this and see if there's a group in your area, you can contact us and you can look up our website to find out more about our organization that is, I believe this person's in Roanoke. It is around the state. So our website is www.vocalvirginia.org. It's V-O-C-A-L, Virginia spelled out, .org.
Here's a question that came across the internet. Is everyone married? And so I'll stretch that out to mean, do you have partners in life that help you, you know, deal with your walk?
Well, this is Deborah. I have a wonderful husband and two kids, but it's certainly, as you would read in the book, that not something that I envisioned ever being able to happen when I first went into the hospital with my psychiatric illness. So, yeah, I have a wonderful husband. When we first got married, he didn't exactly know how to walk through this with me, to put it mildly. It was very hard for him, and he would just kind of say, I can't believe you're thinking you want to kill yourself. You don't even care about me and that kind of stuff. And now he's much more compassionate and understanding, but that's 15 years later. So it's been a journey for our family, and having two young kids has been interesting with this. And I've talked to them some with the book coming out about what mommy goes through and stuff.
Did you have your kids before or during
the
walk?
During, it was actually the best time of my life that I can remember. Something about the hormones were really good for me, and as long as I was pregnant or taking care of my little ones early on, I didn't even need medication. But then as soon as I stopped nursing, then I had to go back on medication soon after that. But yeah, I had them in the midst of it, and I was advised that maybe I wasn't meant to be a mom by someone, and I'm really glad I didn't listen to them.
WNRN Sunday morning wake-up call here, 11:32, as we talk about mental health issues, Vocal, folks from Vocal, vocalvirginia.org, is that right, .org, and ongoing project, The Firewalkers, Madness, Beauty, and Mystery, a book that will be released later in October. Here's a call from a caller in Richmond, Aaron from Richmond, who is a mental health professional and looking for tips on how to help her clients on the road to recovery. Ken, you're fresh in. Your voice is nice and ready to go. Ken from Vocal on the editorial board.
Hi, I'd just like to say that I am also married. My wife is at home listening with our two dogs. And she's been a tremendous support for me in my recovery. The question about recovery, that's a tough one because it's an individual journey. And all I can say is from my own experiences, it takes time for most people. Requires a lot of hard work, commitment on the part of the individual to do what's necessary to find the supports and the connections and sort of the methods and the programs that will help that person.
Let me ask real quick, because I would like to expand the definition or actually get the definition of a mental health crisis. Because I'll tell you why this came to mind. Bob from Charlottesville called. You're all to be commended for common sense approaches to issues that are more common than we admit. So what is the definition? What is included in a mental health crisis that someone else may be writing off as, mental health is when you have a breakdown and you can't stop crying and you can't go to work in the morning and you have to be taken away or you choose to go away from your children. I mean, it's all this sort of movie and television imagery that goes with, to me, a mental health crisis. And I want to expand if it's, everybody knows what I'm trying to get at.
Just briefly, that's a huge question because the gamut is really, it's huge. A mental health crisis can consist of somebody being in their life and being so completely overwhelmed that they can't get anything done, that they can't really be present, and that they're not feeling good about themselves to such a degree that, you know, they just want it all to stop. That, you know, they don't have, this can be a completely internal experience of complete overwhelming overwhelmment of life. And in that kind of situation, we need to reach out. We need to have somebody that we can talk to that can assist us in how to look and what tools do we need. It doesn't have to be any more grandiose than that. And it can be.
Let me go back to Aaron's question, because I feel like I interrupted any potential answer for that. Aaron from Richmond, who's the mental health professional looking for tips on how to help her clients on the road to recovery. Brian?
Well, I think a great place to start, there was a study done in Ohio in 1999. It was completed, done by the Department of Mental Health of that state. I think it had been like an eight-year study. They followed consumers all over the state. And one of their top 10 best practice findings in that document was that consumers are the best, when they say that their needs are being met, they're the best predictor and indicator that their needs are or will be met. And that's basically to say, I mean, to me that seems, you know, somebody who's been through the ringer, so to speak, and has had a mental health crisis, just because you're having a mental health crisis doesn't mean that you don't know whether you prefer, you know, tea, coffee, or milk. I think just because you're doing a mental health crisis, it doesn't mean you've lost, and in many cases, it doesn't mean that you've lost all of your perceptions of what works for you. I mean, things might be a little off, but the what I can offer to folks that are trying to be in a supportive role towards peers of mental health consumers is that I think self-direction is the most important thing that you can support, is to try to find out what that person thinks will help them or is helping them, and really try to support that. And I think it builds on, in psychology, there's a lot of these days looking towards building on a person's strengths rather than trying to fix the weakness. It's sort of like, for example, if and I see that in physical therapy too. Sometimes if you have a part of your body that's not quite working right, how can we compensate for that? How can we strengthen other muscles? And I think that's something I can offer to providers, because I think for a lot of folks, working with professional providers is a great boon and a great help. And the more that you can do to find out from the person themselves what would be most helpful, I think that's going to just increase the possibilities of success for them.
11:38 on the Wake Up Call.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call, brought to you by the Markins of Tiger Fuel and by The Hook, an innovative weekly on newsstands every Thursday. Now here's Rick with what you can find in this week's Hook.
Oh, a few years ago, would you have predicted Charlottesville a major stop on the concert scene? Rolling Stones, Bruce Springsteen, and now U2. How is it that Charlottesville is one of only 20 stops in all of North America by U2? And with all this emphasis on the Charlottesville music scene, The Hook reports on one venue suddenly closing and another finally reopening. Plus, there's another blind date challenge. I love those. The Hook, no membership card needed. And let's thank Alt Energy of Charlottesville for their support, designing and installing solar energy systems in Central Virginia and the Shenandoah Valley. Alt Energy solar systems now practical and reliable, and can pay for themselves in just a few years while reducing your carbon footprint. You can make a difference by making sure computers are off or set to hibernate when not in use, and making sure windows are shaded as you finish up your air conditioning use. More online, altenergyincorporated.com. And what's the most popular question on the phone at NRN the first few days after a fund drive? It's, can I still make a pledge? Well, the answer is yes. And this time you can still get add-on premiums as well. You can pledge for a fashion item and premium sheet at the preset levels and claim remaining or gift certificates or CDs. These are listed at WNRN.org. If you have any additional questions, call the station and talk to the big wigs here. You can also still be entered to win the grand prizes, thanks to everyone who supported us in our most recent fund drive. All right, back on the scene as we talk about mental health with folks from Vocal, Brian and Deborah and Joni and Ken and Cassandra, and the upcoming book, Firewalkers, Madness, Beauty, and Mystery. Here's a call that came in, an anonymous call. Caller has a niece who just went through the fifth of six electroshock therapies. I'd like to know how she can help and what she can say. And have any of the guests been through this?
I haven't.
I have. I was very young at the time when I was subjected to that. It's very different now, and I have seen electric shock work very well for people and really assist them in navigating their depression. And I have also seen it not work. The best thing that I could say is to be there for this person so completely. It's a dramatic procedure, and for me, it's horrifying because of how it was when I was young. I don't believe that it's that way anymore, but to be with this person, you know, there's going to be memory issues, so they need to be have a lot of compassion and connection and communication. You don't want to overlook this. You want to address it head on. How are you feeling? How are you feeling about your memory? How can I help? You know, let's go out for a walk. I mean, basic things that this person knows that they're loved and cared for.
It sounds like, and again, someone who's poorly informed on this, but it sounds like being there for anybody who's grieving over something, who's just found out about a major illness, terminal or not,
right.
Someone who's had a breakup in a relationship.
Right.
I mean, am I putting it too lightly?
No, actually, I mean, the stigma is like a neon sign, and we're people, and we're complex human beings like every other complex human being. If you have diabetes, you go to the doctor, you manage your sugar, etc. When you have a mental health crisis, you do the same thing. You don't sweep it under the table. You don't not be their friend anymore. You know, this is a human being like any other human being. And if we can just embrace that in these people that we love and care for and be there for them. And be there for them knowing, assisting them in knowing for themselves what they need.
A question for anybody who wants to answer, because, Joni, you were speaking from the personal experience, and this person is, this caller is asking about what to do. I'm curious, how do you deal with, you use the word stigma, how do you help someone who has this stigma to them? I mean, do you tell them that it's not a fair stigma? Do you tell them that you can overcome the stigma? Because we can all go back, what has it been, 2 years now since the issue at Virginia Tech? I can't even begin to imagine
right.
how that affected the members and counselors at Vocal. But how do you handle this stigma? I see everyone, no one jumping in to answer that. Ken, I'm gonna attack you with that one. Because you're from the editorial board.
I'm also the consumer advocate at Region 10. I usually answer this question a little bit different than a lot of my friends who are also consumers. And it was that to a certain extent, I never really experienced the stigma. I was very free, very open with my hospitalizations. I was very open with my medications, what I was doing to resolve my mental health issues. And to me, I've always looked at it, and this might go off in a little different direction than what this talk is about, but for me, I've looked at our society with all the pressures and all the stresses and all the conflicts and the violence, have a very difficult time understanding how any human being, individual, can walk through this culture without having a crisis at some point in their life. So for me, that I did have that occur at the age of 28 seemed to be just a natural outcome of the values that were presented to me in my years growing up.
Anyone else want to tackle that? Cassandra?
I also wanted to say that one of the things that I feel that we are coming together here in this moment in this radio station and in our larger movement in the state to try to do is try to create a mental health disability rights movement. And where not as far along as many of the other civil rights movements that have gone on in this country, but I don't think our issues around stigma are that different. So if you look back 50 years ago at how did people deal with stigma if they came out as being gay or if they were African American or if they were a woman trying to have a job, and people will still have those issues today, but there's been a lot of progress and things have come a far way. Today, if you're a woman trying to get a job, you're not necessarily going to be turned away from the door just for walking in the door and being female. And we're not at that place yet with mental illness and with mental health, and there still is a great deal of stigma and not a lot is known. But I think a lot of what we go through is the same, and a lot of the solution is the same, which is to let people know who you are as a human being, show people your strengths, be willing to share your experience if you feel brave enough to do so with your friends and loved ones and employers and community, and start coming together to be advocates and to be a voice. And I hope that it won't take 50 years. I hope that in 1 year or 5 years, we can come back here to this radio station and say we're further along than where we were and that people have heard about us a little bit now. This is our very first radio show.
It's mine too.
Okay. So that's how we're kind of coming together to, it's hard to work on stigma as an individual. It's really scary. It really takes a lot of courage as one person to stand up and talk about your mental health experiences. So we're trying to come together to be a community, to do that, to try to change that.
Question, you talk about working with things from a personal standpoint versus the group. By the way, 979-0919-1877, WNRN Rocks, if you want to ask a question to the members here today from Vocal and about the Firewalkers Project. Do you announce your mental health crisis before you take a job or at work where you are now?
Let me answer that. And I also want to include the stigma part in this. No, I do not. I was working at Region 10, and I was hired there as a consumer provider. So under that situation...
I come back to that. Consumer provider. I feel like I'm... define that for me real quick.
A consumer provider is somebody with the issue serving those with the issue.
Okay. So I could use the word peer counselor.
Yes.
And that
same
would be
thing.
The same thing.
That's
okay.
Right. So I was at Region 10 in that capacity. And that was really excellent because I got to share my experience and my wisdom with those on the journey. In terms of the stigma, I need to say that it's there, and I'm not immune to it. And in fact, I have changed my name for the book. I've decided that I do not want on Google forever the rest of my life that being in the fore. And that's a choice that I have to make. And I'm actually very proud of myself for realizing that that was true for me and making the change. And I think people have to honor who they are in this journey, whatever that means.
Deborah?
I think I'm coming at it from the opposite viewpoint in that I do share. I mean, I didn't. When I first got my job, when I was working at Region 10, the reason I ended up there was because of wanting to find people that I could help. But then with my new job, I wasn't sure if I wanted to share or not. But I realized that it's so much a part of who I am and that I'd rather let them know up front that I have a lot of strengths that I can bring to your organization. I am well-educated. I understand. I have a lot of skills. But this might sometimes, you know, be an issue less so with the people that I work with as clients as with coworkers probably. But, you know, I want them to know up front. It's not something that I want to hit them with later, and it's not something that I'm ashamed of at this point in my life, and it's just been so much a part of my identity for so long that to hide it would almost feel like I was being a fraud. But that's just because of the journey I've taken and how it's gone. So,
Cassandra, let me jump back here and go back to the book for a moment, because that's really where one of the things that we're doing is showcasing or attempting to showcase the book that's upcoming at the end of the month. I think if I remember correctly, you had something over 50 people submit their stories. There were 20 plus that sort of made the first cut, and then you came down to 7. As the editor of the book, how did you make those decisions?
It was torture. That was a really deep and thoughtful process for us, that I think in a way was kind of a spiritual journey, trying to allow ourselves to be led towards who was meant to be in this book. And Ken and Brian, who are here today, were also part of that selection committee. The reason it was torture was because we received absolutely heartbreakingly beautiful stories from people around the state, and I've never had that experience of having to turn people away for their stories. And I just kept reminding myself at the time that, you know, it's part of the process. Like, the good that's coming out of this also goes hand in hand with the flip side of it, and that we really, really wanted to create a book that had stories that really shined on this one topic. And there were many, many other people that wrote us beautifully in many different ways. And the story that we were trying to tell is what people have been talking about here today, about sort of chronicling a profound, spiritual, turbulent journey of going through a mental health crisis and coming out the other side stronger. So we really looked for stories that spoke specifically to that, and for people that were beautiful, wonderful storytellers and that had stories that just grabbed our hearts. And many other people have great stories out there, and it was very hard to turn people away. And I sent one email a day to people that weren't accepted, because I couldn't even bear to sit down and send them all at once. So it was a really deep process for us.
Here's a call from someone from the organization On Our Own, who we put on here before, called to say, good job on your first radio show, and the best way to avoid stigma is to surround oneself with supporters. Let me just toss out there, I lived next to the On Our Own building for about a decade, and I'll tell you that when Mr. Lessard took his music shop out of there and On Our Own went in there, I was like, oh, goodness, what have I gotten myself into now? And they were some of the best neighbors that I ever had. I mean, I'm talking about living away from them, like with a smaller than a bicycle alleyway in the buildings, and that was really good. And On Our Own is a building that supports folks with mental health by providing them food, computers to do email and to provide work for jobs, and I'm sure I'm forgetting other things, but a wonderful organization. Cassandra, you talk about something that I read called the sacred quest. You want to share that with us real quick?
Oh, that's a hard question. Can you be more specific?
No, because that was the title of the two-page paragraph that I read.
Okay.
Well, what do you mean by sacred quest?
Okay. Well, I guess there's probably two sides to that question. One was the creation of the book itself, which I think was a sacred quest for many of us to come together. And we really wanted to create a book that was really different from what was out there. And as you mentioned, after Virginia Tech and the stigma and a lot of the reports that were going out in the media were really scaring people. And ultimately, that climate of fear in our state wound up leading to changes in legislation. So it was beyond just fear in people's heads. It became fear in people's hearts and fear in the laws. We really wanted to tell a different kind of story. We wanted to start putting something out there that would give people hope and would be a different way of looking at things. And that, in a way, I think was our sacred journey of finding the people that were meant to be in this book and telling their stories. The other sacred quest is each of our individual personal journeys towards where we were meant to be. And for me, one of my journeys that I'll just talk about, part of my sacred quest for this is, before I moved to Virginia, I was homebound and dealt with physical and mental health issues for about 5 years. And during that time, I came across a book one day that was about the disability civil rights movement. And I never knew there was a disability rights movement. I was living in solitude and isolation in a rural area. I had absolutely no idea that there were people that were proud to be people with disabilities, people that were advocates as people with disabilities, people that were creating movements and communities. So part of my quest is coming from that place of where I was about 10 years ago or 15 years ago, living in solitude, living in that place, coming across that book, to where I am today of creating this book that we're making with the hope that somebody else will pick it up one day. And maybe experience a little bit of what I experienced. That is my hope.
All right. Just a few minutes left. Let me take a moment and thank Blue Ridge Mountain Sports for helping us be here today. They have outdoor gear, clothing, and footwear for all your hiking, travel, and everyday needs. You'll find new products there, such as the North Face and Patagonia, along with Gore-Tex footwear from Keen and Vasque. That's Blue Ridge Mountain Sports in the Barracks Road Shopping Center in Charlottesville. They're at Wintergreen and in Richmond at the Chesterfield Town Center and West Broad Street. And this is WNRN Charlottesville and WNRS FM Sweetbriar Amherst Lynchburg. Okay, 11:58 as we finish up for the last few minutes talking with Vocal about their project, Firewalkers, Madness, Beauty, and Mystery, to be published and available later in October. The Firewalkers... What's the online? What's the website?
The website for the book is thefirebook.org. Just put that into your web browser, and that'll take you to the site on the Firewalkers book.
All right. Last question that came across the phones. Do you feel like you're in recovery? What makes you feel that way? And would you prefer not to suffer from mental illness? So I don't know if we'll get all five. Everybody in there.
That's a good question. Of course I would prefer not to. You know, there's that question, but it is what it is. I have this imbalance. I live with this imbalance, and I don't even use the word recovery, but that's appropriate. It is recovery. It's balance. It's a daily maintenance, and that's what recovery is, a daily maintenance. Sometimes it's an hourly maintenance or a moment-to-moment maintenance, but it is about being attentive.
Deborah?
I definitely feel like I'm in recovery, and this is a journey that, with mental illness, that if I had to do it over again, I would be willing to walk through. I feel like God gives us all different trials, and for me, this was mine, and it's shaped me into the person that I am today, and I feel like I'm definitely in recovery in that sometimes I still have some of the same symptoms that I had, say, 2 years ago when I wasn't able to keep the job that I was in. But now I'm able to do different things with them than I was before, and able to catch things earlier. And,
all right.
That's good.
Time to turn it over to Drew Thompson and Les Temps. VocalVirginia.org.
That's right.
TheFireBook.org. The book will be published later in the month. Firewalkers, Madness, Beauty, and Mystery. Thanks to all five of you for coming on.
Thanks for having us.
Next week, Lee Channing will be back.
This has been your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday. And by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane, Exxon gasoline, and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management, staff, or board of WNRN. You can contact Rick at abstractme@AOL.com or at wakeupcall@WNRN.org. The Wake Up Call is produced by Sean McCord. Tune in again next Sunday morning at 11 for The Wake Up Call, only on WNRN.